I think we really need to test North Korea's intentions before we get to the bargaining table.
The Koreas prepare for their first summit in over a decade. It's Tuesday, April 24th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, justice demanded in Pakistani streets. China drives toward electric. Classrooms come to caves. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Days before the two Korean leaders are set to meet, South Korea on Monday halted cross-border propaganda broadcasts, according to the Defense Ministry, which said was aimed at reducing military tensions and creating the mood for peaceful talks. This will be the first inter-Korean summit in more than a decade. As preparations are underway, President Donald Trump on Sunday cautioned, quote, "We're a long way from conclusion on North Korea on denuclearization." Earlier, Mr. Trump welcomed the North's decision to halt nuclear and missile testing and scrapping its nuclear test site. Harry Kazianis, director of defense studies at the Center for the National Interest, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the world has been down the path of past North Korean broken promises.
The thing that we have to understand is why would the North Koreans give up their nuclear weapons? It's the only ace card that they have to stop the United States or South Korea or even Japan from imposing regime change or, you know, attacking them militarily. So in order for North Korea to even consider giving up its nuclear weapons, what would we be able to offer them? What would China be able to offer them? We could be talking hundreds of billions of dollars, economic incentives. What they'd ask for is astronomical. And there's one thing that we have to really consider here. The North Koreans have not committed to denuclearization. They've committed to talking about it, but they've committed to talking about denuclearization countless times. So I think it's important to sort of take all these statements with a grain of salt, whether it's offering to close their nuclear facilities, which, to be honest with you, are just tunnels that they could just start using again, or testing missiles. They can start testing missiles at any time. And the missiles that they've actually offered to stop testing are long-range missiles. They haven't talked about short-range, medium-range, intermediate-range. So this whole thing is filled with a lot of holes then. We're going to have to see how it plays out.
An analyst said that North Korea has a long history of raising the issue of denuclearization, has committed to freeze its nuclear weapon programs in the past. We all remember how those pledges and commitments went down over the past decades.
The North Koreans have a history of making big, bold promises and then not delivering them. And the thing is, too, is even if North Korea does have a summit with South Korea, which is going to happen on Friday, or they have a summit sometime in either late May or June with President Trump, even if they do declare that they are willing to fully give up all of their nuclear weapons, the devil's in the details. So, for example, would the North Koreans allow fully intrusive inspections, meaning, you know, hundreds, maybe even 1,000 or more inspectors would be able to go all through North Korea and go anywhere? And that means Kim Jong-un's palaces, military bases, installations, scientific facilities. They would have to be able to go anywhere to not only document the size and scale of North Korea's nuclear program, but actually get a full accounting of how many bombs or missiles he has. Would the North Koreans allow that? Does that mean that the North Koreans would allow that all of their, you know, atomic facilities, you know, power plants, nuclear reactors, would all that be able to be, you know, scaled down and packaged and sent out of the country? These are all the questions that have to be answered. And to be quite frank, they need to be answered before there's a summit with President Trump. Because my fear is we're going to go down this whole peace path where everybody's expectations are going to get super, super high. And then when we come to the end of the road, when the North Koreans say, well, I'm not going to allow inspectors in. You're just going to have to trust us. So I think we really need to test North Korea's intentions before we get to the bargaining table.
In an editorial, China's state-run Global Times called on the United States, South Korea, and Japan to cherish the North's promise to halt its testing, calling it a hard-won state of affairs. It said the goal of denuclearization should be achievable. It called on the international community to encourage Pyongyang by lifting some sanctions and resuming certain exchanges. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. White House sees denuclearization as ultimate goal of North Korea talks. China says many Chinese casualties in North Korea transport accident. Coalition of military help for Philippines will put China on higher alert. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also visit our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Several thousand people attended a rally in Pakistan's second largest city to demand justice for the country's ethnic Pashtun population, despite an initial crackdown by local authorities. The rally was one of a series planned to demand an end to extrajudicial killings and the return of victims of enforced disappearances. VOA's Aisha Tanzim was at the rally and shares more on the story.
Men and women raised their hands and sang along enthusiastically on a revolutionary poem originally written against a military dictator in the 60s. The protest was peaceful, despite earlier arrests and later release of some of the protest leaders. A day before, local authorities had released sewage water in this ground, which volunteers cleared themselves. Many who gathered here had come from as far off as Pakistan's tribal areas bordering Afghanistan. One old man explained why he made such a long trek.
I have feelings too. I have spent time in a human society. Human beings are dying, getting killed, and no one is saying anything.
Various human rights groups and civil society organizations joined the protest, including the Human Rights Commission of Pakistan.
I think the first thing that's important for us is that this is a movement that symbolizes the struggle of the common Pakistani people for human rights, for the rights of people to their life, to their liberty, and to their dignity.
When the young leader Manzoor Pashtin arrives, the crowd goes wild. Outspoken and fearless, he has become an unlikely leader. He openly criticizes the country's powerful military for what he claims are unconstitutional violations of their rights. The military has indicated it is not happy with the movement and its anti-military stance. It claims it has worked hard to try and clear the Pashtun areas from militants, but complete restoration takes time. Meanwhile, there are indications that media coverage of the movement is being censored.
Pakistan's local television channels that usually cover most protests live are conspicuous in their absence. Some say they've been directed by the country's powerful establishment to not cover the Pashtun Tahaffuz movement.
PTM intends to continue holding these protest rallies, including one in Pakistan's largest city, Karachi, in May. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Lahore.
We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The week-long 2018 Beijing Motor Show gets underway Wednesday, with the world's top automakers showcasing luxury, sport utility, electric, and plug-in hybrid vehicles in the world's biggest auto market. Last year, China auto sales reached 28.9 million units. According to the J.D. Power, China SUV sales are up 43%, while EV and PHEV sales are ahead of 2016 levels by triple digits, with help from government subsidies. General Motors division Buick is expected to unveil two electric models. Jeep will debut a Jeep Commander, while Ford plans to preview an all-new Focus Compact. Hyundai and Kia will also showcase new models, while Nissan will highlight three electric entries. Toyota, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, Audi, Jaguar, and Volkswagen are among others to have a big presence in Beijing. Eric Harwood, an Asian studies professor at the Hawaii-based East-West Institute, follows the Chinese auto industry closely.
All of the major auto manufacturers around the world, they go to Beijing to show off their latest models, to tempt the very large market in China for any kind of car, for ordinary sedans, but also the high-end luxury cars find some of their biggest sales in China. So the auto show is a way for those luxury makers and pretty much any brand to show off what they can do and to attract and excite Chinese consumers to buy their vehicles.
Chinese auto sales rose about 3% last year to the nearly 29 million unit mark, which Harwood compares to the smaller U.S. auto market.
The U.S. market is about 17 million or so. So, yes, Chinese are very eager to buy cars, especially because the used car market isn't so well developed in China. And also, Chinese consumers like to buy new cars. So part of the reason the U.S. market is not growing as quickly in China is because we have a pretty well-developed used vehicle market, whereas in China, there's still many people are still buying cars as the first one that they or their family have ever owned.
The government in Beijing has committed to electric vehicle production in a bid to phase out gasoline-fueled vehicles. Asian Studies professor Eric Hartwood says air quality is the reason.
Part of the problem for China is pollution. Major cities like Beijing, Shanghai, to a little bit lesser extent, many cities in the northeast, they're all facing choking air pollution. And so electric vehicles are one of the ways to get the smog that cars produce away from the big cities.
Harwood says the big push for electric cars is also to gain an edge in technology.
The Chinese want to not only produce cars for their own market, but eventually become global dominators in the electric vehicle and related technology field.
China announced last week that it will allow full foreign ownership in the auto industry starting this year with electric vehicle producers, with limits for commercial vehicles ending in 2020 and all passenger vehicles by 2022. Coming up, schools come to modern-day cave dwellers. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. Hundreds of motorcycle taxi drivers gathered outside Indonesian Parliament Monday to call for tighter guidance over the startup ride-hailing companies they drive for. The drivers want the government to regulate ride charges, insurance, and other matters related to their work. Take your information ride with VOA 60 online and VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, getting an education seemed impossible for some displaced children in the mountainous Afghan province of Bamyan. They and their families live in caves that dot the cliffs around the city. Due to a lack of identity documents, they cannot attend school. But as VOA's Zafar Bamyani discovered, a classroom has come to them. Faith Lapidus narrates his report.
Centuries ago, these caves were places of worship for Buddhist monks. Today, they're homes for 200 poor Afghan families and one classroom. Farshad Ahmadi was able to stay in school after her family moved to the caves about a decade ago. She's now a senior at an all-girls high school in Bamyan. But she felt the need to educate the children of cave dwellers. So, 6 years ago, she converted her living space into a classroom. For 2 hours every day, she teaches 30 elementary school-age kids different subjects, including English. She says she wants to give an opportunity to the children who don't have access to mainstream schools.
Cave settlers are no different than people who live in modern communities or people who live in fancy apartments and buildings. They too can study, can go to public schools, and take private courses, so they enhance their abilities and developments.
Using her own money, the young teacher opened a small library with 200 books to improve the reading skills of her students. She hopes to expand her cave class in the future.
In future, my plan is to convert my small course to a big school.
Years of conflict and poverty forced these families to seek refuge in these ancient caves with no basic facilities and, prior to Ahmadi's initiative, no chance of getting an education for their children. After VOA's Afghan service broadcast a report about Ahmadi's school, Afghanistan's Ministry of Education offered to help her in her efforts. For Zafar Bamyani in Bamyan, Afghanistan, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook and voanews.com, streaming each and every day. If you happen to be out and about in Asia, you'll find us on the radio as well, like CCU Radio at National Chung-Cheng University in Taipei, Taiwan. Hello to everyone there. Thanks for listening today. Our thanks, too, go to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Zeynep Abdel-Rahman, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, David Bird, and Ira Melman on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.